Hey, welcome to the Chess Experience. On this show, it's all about helping adult improvers. I want to make learning chess easier for you to navigate, and I also want you to have a more fun experience along the way. I'm your host, Daniel Lona, a fellow chess amateur. Let's get to it. This show is sponsored by Chess.com, the world's largest chess community. One of Chess.com's most popular features is called Game Review. This feature weaves together a lot of benefits in one post-game analysis. For example, you can see how accurately you played, whether you made any moves that were deemed brilliant or great, which makes me feel a lot better about my chess when I get one of those. And Game Review also offers a virtual coach that gives insights on every move. It'll also show you alternate lines that would have been better for you to help you understand how you can improve your game. So go on chess.com, play a game, and try out the Game Review. All right, welcome to today's episode where I will take a little break from focusing intensely on how to improve your game at the board and instead take a little time to appreciate chess in a different context. So today I'm really excited and lucky to announce that my guest, Carla Berkowitz, is the executive producer and creator of the wonderful chess film Critical Thinking. This movie was released in 2020. It stars and is directed by the great actor and comedian John Leguizamo. There are no spoilers in this interview, so if you haven't seen it yet, you can safely listen. But I do highly recommend you see this film. A little quick background on Carla. She's an immigrant, born in Venezuela, and came with her family to South Florida. She prides herself on being a Latina filmmaker and often the only woman or Latina in the room when meeting with Hollywood studio executives. Her company, Schrodinger's Cat Productions, produced the film and is even developing a TV series spinoff of Critical Thinking right now, which is great news. I think you'll hear a lot of her acquired wisdom and tenacity in the story she tells. First, we dive into how the film was created. Then, in the second half, we talk about the chess in the movie and the life lessons it offers. Hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Carla. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast today. How are you?
I am so honored. I'm great. And thank you so much for having me and, you know, just speaking about this really special film that we are, you know, the custodians of at this point.
Yeah, I am so honored and excited to have you on this episode. Your film, Critical Thinking, was part of my chess journey because I, like many people, got re-inspired to get back into the game from the Queen's Gambit. And then I just went on a tear for the past 13 months to be very involved with chess again in my life. And part of that journey was seeing I wanted to consume every film there was out there about chess, and that included Critical Thinking. And so that was just, your film was part of my experience in getting back into chess. So I'm very excited to talk about it.
Wow. You want to make me cry within the first 5 seconds? Thank you, Daniel. That's very sweet. And of course, I reached out to you because of a tweet, and then you reached out to me, and it was kind of organic, and I like things that way.
Yeah. I couldn't have been more excited to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you.
So yeah, let's start by discussing the origins of this movie. In other interviews, Carla, you mentioned that it was a 20-year journey from the moment you had the idea for this film to basically when the camera started rolling. So what inspired the idea for this film?
Okay, so in 1997, I woke up on a Sunday morning. At the time, the Miami Herald had a print magazine on Sundays, you know, kind of like the New York Times does and many other newspapers. They don't have it anymore. It went digital. But at the time, it had a magazine. And that Sunday in 1997 was a picture of Ito, one of the, you know, the guys in one of the guys portrayed in the film. And he was, he's Dominican and he's black and he had dreadlocks and he was holding a king. And, the title of the article was Kings in the Hood with a Z, Kings in the Hood. Hmm. I mean, what else did I need? I mean, without reading even having to read the article. Yeah. It was just simply mind blowing, of course, I did read the article, but what stood out to me was not only was this a true story, but it was happening. It was happening in the 90s in Miami, and the 90s in Miami was not a, it was not a great place to be and not a great place to exist in. And especially in the inner cities, where all of the problems that were happening, including the East Coast and the West Coast shootings of, you know, Tupac and Biggie, and even the whole Elian Gonzalez thing. And it was just a terrible, terrible time, all around. But in Miami, it was really, really bad, ugly, just bad. In spite of all of this, there was an F school in the worst part of the worst part of Miami called Miami Jackson Senior High School. And what they were doing throughout this turmoil in the country, and especially in Miami, is they kind of had their heads down. They were producing I call them gentle gangsters in a way, gentle chess gangsters who didn't care what was going on. They wanted out, and the only way to get out was to play chess for them. It was like there is a line in the film where it says, use your mind as your weapon. And that's what they did. And they found they looked around and they realized there's nothing else for us here. So they had a mentor, which I'll go into later, Mr. Martinez, who was portrayed by John Leguizamo. And that is how they got out. And that particular year, which was actually the next year, 1998, it was based in 1998, the film. I don't want to give away the ending for people that haven't seen the film, but I chose that year because of, it was the dream team. They called them the Jackson Five. And of course, the ending of the film is everything is true in the film. But the ending was, of course, very true and incredibly, I think, a life lesson. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to do any spoilers. But if anybody hasn't seen the film, I suggest you just, even if you just watch the last 10 minutes, you'll get it. Yeah. But
can I ask
you know,
oh,
sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
When you saw that article in the paper about their story, you got the idea that you wanted to make a movie about their story in that moment. Is that right?
In that moment. I had never made a film. I've been in that industry for many, many years. I used to produce fitness videos, 15 I did. And it's basically, you know, the same thing. It's getting an idea. It's bringing the money. It's getting a script, getting cast, you know, shooting. And then, of course, that's not over. That's not even that. That's the end of the beginning. Basically, then you have to sell it. So it's kind of like the same, much less money, obviously, and the scope is much, you know, less people, but it's the same situation. So right away when I saw the article and I realized that everybody else in Miami was going to take their newspaper and throw it out that night, I said, I don't know what happened. I feel like my head exploded. I feel like I had a quantum shift. Like I said to myself, who is playing chess these days? And it is certainly not the prep schools in the US, in, you know, especially in the East Coast, the Andovers, the Exeters, which are amazing schools. Two of my children went to two of those schools, and I've nothing up to, but incredible things to say, but that's not where the genius is coming from. The genius is coming from the inner cities where they cling to life using chess and chess lessons to get out. And the other schools that the private prep schools, they don't need to get out of anywhere. They're in already. So I found this to be a life lesson that like nothing else, because it was true. So I felt that if I did not illuminate this, nobody else would, and nobody else did. And so I met them. I met these kids when they were 16. Now they have children of their own. So imagine. I mean, it was a long journey. It was 20 years. It was a long journey.
If I ever got to do a second podcast with you, I would want to do one exclusively on those 20 years, because that's just amazing to me to keep the interest in fire alive for that long. And I'm sure there's a lot of stories to tell in those 20 years about how you brought this finally to fruition. But I want to just take a big picture take on that. Like, 20 years is a long time to keep pushing for a project. What motivated you to keep going for that long?
I have the answer, the only answer I ever use. The answer is, when I met these boys, not only did they not speak English, of which I can relate because I'm from Venezuela. When I came here, I didn't speak English either, so I could relate. When I saw these boys and I looked in their eyes and I looked at the coach's eyes and I said, I'm going to make a movie about you, and it's going to be about you for real. It's not a documentary. It's a movie, but it's going to be your first name, your last name, your life story. And then the only thing I said to them was, there were no hashtags then. It was just, you know, whatever. I said, just trust me. It'll be done. And so once you say that to 5, 16, 17-year-old, very, very underrepresented and just such hard lives, these kids had just such hard lives. Once you look in their eyes and the coach, and you say that to them, how do you not do it? I mean, I can tell you for one thing for sure that there was not one day, not one single day, not one single day in those 20 years that I didn't work on this film. Even if there was nothing to work on, I would just make up stuff or make up, you know, the other word with the SH. Literally, I would make, if there was nothing going on for a week and I just kept working, I'd make a trip to LA just to move the energy around. I would, you know, call whoever. I would do whatever it needed to do to keep it alive in the universe. I'm not like, I don't like hug trees, but I do believe, in the energy of the universe. And I think it brought it to life. When you ask me the next question, and I'll tell you why I brought it to life.
Okay. Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love hearing that that's what inspired you.
Oh yeah. I mean, how do you look in people's eyes? You know, young guys who had it so rough, who came on, some came on rafts, some didn't, but I mean, it was just awful. I mean, how do you walk away and not do it? You have no choice. It's in your blood.
I was intrigued by some of what you said in other interviews, that you had a scriptwriter that you ultimately got to produce the final script for this film. So I couldn't help but wonder in my mind, like, how you interacted and collaborated with the scriptwriter. How did that interaction go?
So there was a scriptwriter before the scriptwriter who ended up writing a fictional story of a story that didn't need to be fictional. So of course that took a few years and then he was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of hate to say that, but that was ridiculous. I didn't understand. So then we hired Dido Montiel, and he has like a cult film called A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints. And it's a street film, and it's a biographical film about him growing up in Astoria, Queens, and then moving to LA. 5 minutes into it, I knew he was the right person because this is a street movie. That was a street movie, and that was it. And he's Latin as well. So it made a big difference. So yes, he wrote a script, and of course it took a few iterations, maybe 18 by the time we got into production, but he was the right person at the right time. And why did it take your question was, did I have anything to do with it? I like to stay in my lane, because even though I have a lot of ideas, they may not be appropriate or they may not work for this particular screenwriter. I don't want to get him off of, you know, I didn't want to, like, you know, trip him up and give him ideas that weren't in his, you know, in his brain. I mean, he did have a very successful movie at the time and others as well. So I let him write, and he came to Miami and he interviewed and the boys and the coach and, you know, the typical thing. And then he wrote. And then we had a beautiful script. And then it was greenlit when John Leguizamo came, which was, sounds really crazy, but John Leguizamo came at the 17-year mark, which for some strange, ridiculous reason sounds longer than 20 years. 17 years. So I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, but regardless, when John came, it got greenlit and it went really fast. And I think, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. You can finish your point.
No, I was going to say, people ask me, well, why do you think it took so long? And I feel that it was waiting for John. I mean, I don't think there was another human being that could have portrayed Mario Martinez and in such a way that got to him, because he had just played Latin History for Morons on Broadway. He was a teacher. So he wanted to be a teacher on screen. He wanted to immortalize it, I believe. And that's what got him so obsessed with this project, because of course he also was discriminated. He's Latin. He fell in love with the film and it was perfect for him. He had just come off a 2 year Broadway run or a year Broadway run. And then it got to Netflix and he was in that teacher mode. So I believe that, and then of course, you know, he's so well respected and the boys took a loving to him and he did extra, I would say, you know, he kind of expanded the script to make it sound more like he was talking as opposed to just a Latin teacher, you know, kind of thing. And so between him and the Ditto, it became a masterpiece. And and then other things happened along the way, which made it even more of a masterpiece.
While we're on the subject of John, I have a question that I don't think I've heard you be asked in other interviews, at least not the ones on YouTube.
Be careful.
Okay. nothing very personal or anything like
no,
that.
No, I don't care about personal. Be careful with the chess level.
Oh, the chess level. No, very simple and basic.
I'm joking. Yeah.
When I first watched the film, I've watched it twice now since the first time.
Thank
since
you.
Today. Yeah, absolutely. But the first time I watched it, I didn't know. Like I've always been a fan of John Leguizamo, and I was like, wait a minute, I never knew he was into chess. And then I stopped myself and I said, well, I don't know, maybe he wasn't before this film. That's an assumption I'm making, but I had to believe it. Like, wow, this chess heavy of a film, he must have had some interest or at least intrigue in it prior to making the film. Can you speak to what his personal experience was with chess?
He's a chess player. He goes to Washington Square Park. I'm quoting him. He's certainly not, you know, he would say that he's not a master. He loses, you know, with the guys in the park, as as most people do. I do. But it wasn't about the chess so much. The chess was so incidental in the sense of talking about the Latinx and Black kids that were so ignored and squeezed, you know, in every way. They just couldn't catch a break. And when chess came along, Mario Martinez, the actual instructor, it became a 10-year chess program. Yeah. I only chose 1 year. And I think I mentioned that I am spinning this off to tell into a TV series to tell the other 9 years, because they all deserve to be told. It was just, I had to pick 1 year and I chose 98. But there are 9 more years of, you know, of brilliance. Like where is this genius coming from? And I say genius as a vowel, not an adjective. Where is it coming from? It's certainly not coming, you know, from what people think have thought for so many years. It's coming from a different place now. It's coming, it's almost like a social justice thing. It's almost like, you know, you want to, you're angry at your life and you're angry at other people or whatever. You take it out on the chessboard. That's it. Yeah. And then you walk away, you shake hands and you move on, you know, and these chess lessons help them. And it was because of their mentor, Mario Martinez, who was John Leguizamo portrayed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'll ask you one of the tough questions now, but it's not deep on chess.
It's okay. I can fake it.
You were involved in shepherding and getting this project made for 20 years.
Yeah.
My understanding is in that 20 years, you really didn't get involved with the game of chess, and it didn't really happen for you until after the film was made. So how did you manage to be so connected to a story about chess, but not dive into it in that time?
So that is why I say that the chess is incidental, in the sense that, of course, it's important because that's what got them out mm-hmm. of a word that they don't use anymore, the hood. You know, that's what mm-hmm. got them out. That is what got them out. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't too worried about the chess part. I begged those five guys to teach me, especially Marcel Martinez, who, if you again haven't seen the film, should see it just for one scene in particular, in the middle and at the end. But they told me no, because you'll get addicted, you'll stop trying to make the film, everything else will be secondary to your life, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't believe them, but I said, all right, I'm going to take your word for it. So the minute the film, so of course they did not teach me. And I could have taken lessons from other people, but I felt like I was cheating on them. So I waited. The minute the film landed, I taught myself, which was about 2 years ago. Yeah.
That is so funny that they knew just how like compelling and obsessive inducing chess was. They were like, wait, get the film
at that level. Exactly. Yeah. At that level. Yeah, for sure. And they knew me. They knew that once I grabbed onto something, there's nothing that will, it's like a barracuda, you know, like you don't let go until every piece of meat is off. So that's kind of how I am with, pretty much with most things. But, and I certainly can totally grasp the concept of not being able to stop playing. At this point in time, I may not all together, but I would say I play like 3 hours a day, every day.
Wow.
Little by little. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I feel like I missed out on 20 years of learning. So I'm kind of trying to learn the lessons, but you know, mostly, Daniel, I don't play to win tournaments or anything like that. I kind of play to really learn the lessons that these, I try to really learn these lessons, like Zugzwang, for example, like where'd he go? There's not always, you can't always win, you know, or a draw. Like, you know, how do you accept a draw elegantly, you know, and just in a way that you don't walk away and, you know, in anger, like you learn, you know, losing doesn't feel good, but it certainly teaches you much more than this is just me speaking. I'm not speaking for any other chess player. I feel losing doesn't feel so bad anymore to me. I don't try to lose, but if I lose, I lose and I move on. Yeah.
I am still trying to get there. Haven't gotten there yet.
You know, it's an art, and it's a beautiful, it's an art, chess, obviously, as you know. Not every painting you paint, or not everything you do in art, not every music song you write is good, but you learn.
So now that you've picked up chess since the film was released, and you've experienced more of the game, do you have any new appreciation for anything related to the story, the film, or any new insights now that you can look at it through the lens of a chess player?
So it's a good question. You should do this for a living. You're welcome. So one of the things that I was very, very set on, and I wasn't going to be moved, I wasn't going to be convinced in any way, is I wasn't going to cheat the chess just to make it look cinematically beautiful. There are a lot of, I'm not going to mention any names, but there are a lot of chess movies that have a lot of mistakes, simple ones like the right, you know, the white corner is not by your right hand. Like there's simple things that people think that they're not going to notice, but people do notice. Not if you don't play chess, maybe, but if you do play chess, if you're going to watch a film that has things like that, you're not going to take it very seriously. So we were actually voted by Chess Base as the only movie so far, chess movie, that has its own mistakes.
It's incredible.
And the reason that happened is because I was just I wasn't going to be moved or convinced. And also, the more important reason, it's not me, is the fact that the games that you see in the film were actual games played at the actual time in the actual tournament. So obviously, as you know, chess is obviously you write it. It's a language. So everybody wrote their moves down, including Marcel, who played in Cuba. As you saw, that book that you saw when he mm-hmm. went into the classroom, that little book, that's real. That was a real book he brought from Cuba. That's a real book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there are little fun facts that you could continue to ask me that most people don't know. So there were no chess mistakes because the people were literally, the actors were there, but the consultants were like right off of camera range. No, don't move there. Don't move there. No, seriously. they it was a choreographed. It was choreographed like a dance.
So are you saying that you're maybe even more proud now about how much you were accurate with the chess in the film now that you are a chess player yourself?
I'm completely proud of the film, whether or not there was a mistake or whether or not I, you know, didn't learn how to play chess. But now that I do, and I've seen other movies that just are so lazy in the sense of like, just cut the scene and change the move. I'm so silly, right. But they don't because, and so, yeah, I'm extraordinarily proud that for someone that didn't play chess at the time, managed to come out with a beautiful film that should have gotten more attention. And I'll go into that in a second. We were a COVID movie that did come out that had a 100% record in chess. So I'm extraordinarily proud. Yeah.
I have just one more question about kind of like a little bit of the technical side of the chess in the film. And then I want to actually get into some of the life lessons and themes that overlap with chess themes, because I think that's an amazing part of the story, how those two blend together. But just on the technical, one more point on the technical side, you know, like you said, the chess is extremely accurate in this film. It's wonderful to see that. You don't get it enough in Hollywood, that's for sure. I'm just curious, like, who were your chess consultants and how did they work with the filmmakers?
Well, that's a good question. The chess consultants were the actual boys that were being portrayed. We just, you know, we had no, I would never, you know, insult them to the point where I felt that, you know, that was, not enough. Mm-hmm. You know amazing. What I'm saying? So, yeah. So we pretty much, used every single boy that was, and more that were in, you know, that were there. So it worked. I mean, it worked and they knew which it was their games. They played those mm-hmm. games. So, you know, they knew, of course, and everything was perfect.
So they were occasionally there on the scene, on like when there was scenes.
Oh, it wasn't occasionally. It was literally they kind of had to give up their lives for a while, and then about 2 months before we started filming, the cast members came down, and they taught. There were some of the actors that played chess already, and some didn't, and they were just. And then the ones that didn't got proficient enough. At least to play, but they work. It was a choreographed, dance.
Yeah. Yeah. I was impressed that how, I don't know exactly how to say it, how fluid and natural their use of moving the pieces on the board was, because that's something any experienced chess player can identify instantly. And everyone looked like they were a veteran who's
played
chess.
They had chess swag. That was my thing. I said to everybody, please have some swag. So if you see like some of the guys would take like the piece that they captured with and they would use that to stop the clock instead of their hands, you know, and stuff like that. So it was like very, you're right. It was, and it's a good notification. It's a good thing to notice because they did rehearse a lot. And John was all into, you know, rehearsal, because he comes from Broadway. So, you know, he wanted them to look like they've been playing forever. And I think that without sounding too, you know, whatever, I think they mastered that.
They really did. No, it's, it, that their physical performance of how they play on the board is indistinguishable from someone who's played for years. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So chess isn't an easy thing to portray on screen. We talked a little bit about that before we got on this conversation that we're having now, Carla. And, you know, if an audience member hasn't learned the game of chess, they don't know what they're seeing on the board if it's depicted in a film. They don't know how to interpret it. And correct. And on top of that, you know, just the nature of chess, a lot of what happens in a chess game is just two players sitting there staring at a board in silence with not much movement or anything happening. So correct. Given those two facts, how do you keep the chess games themselves interesting for the audience?
Well, we always were going to make this as a sports movie, kind of like the Rocky of chess movies. And that's why, and I'll give a little spoiler, at the very last scene, you saw red, you know, velvet ropes around the table. Mm-hmm. So it was always going to be, because how many times can you focus on a furrowed brow, you know, or your eyes going up, or you're like holding your head in your hands or whatever. It's just hard, you know, to make it palatable for the general audience. I mean, this is not a documentary. It's a movie. So we decided to we escalated. I don't know if you got that, but every tournament and every scene was more escalated, the tension, until we got to the last scene. And then, of course, that was incredibly full of tension until the end. But we made it, we really tried. I don't want to use try. We made it into a sports movie, period. And I hope, and I'm glad that you see it, because it certainly wasn't like, oh my God, when's the next scene going to happen? On the contrary, it's like, why did that scene go so fast?
Right. Yeah. I don't think I appreciated enough from tournament to tournament, but I definitely noticed the escalation of tension in the very last tournament that's shown in the film. And you could see that, you know, it's the music races, the pieces move faster. You know, the cuts I think are a little faster too. And you get that tense, exciting feeling. I think it's done really well. You know, it's funny. It just occurred to me that I think that's even valuable for chess players, because even someone who's experienced in chess is still going to want to see excitement and a quicker pace in film.
I mean, how many times do you get excitement playing chess like that? Never, actually, because you don't have a camera on you, you know. But right. One of the interesting things, and it's a good point to mention, is we started filming. We started pre-production in 2018. And at that point, unfortunately, Anthony Bourdain passed away. Hmm. His DP, his director of photography, cinematographer, his name is Zach Zamboni. And he was with Bourdain for all of his career. So Parts Unknown, you know, all of those magnificent beautiful episodes, which you could actually watch with the sound off, because the cinematography was so magnificent. So John wanted to hire Zach, and I said to him, well, you made a bowl of noodles in Vietnam come to life. What can you do with a chessboard? And that's real. That's a true story. So he's like, just watch me. And if you notice the extreme close-ups, the way that, you know, we filmed through an acrylic table going up, going down. I mean, we used things that normally would not be used to play chess, because they're used for more high action things. But we decided to just throw everything at it, everything that he has won all these Emmys for. And, you know, if we could make it anything a bit like Bourdain's shows, you know, we would be happy. And it turned out that I think it's his best work.
Yeah. That talent that you're talking about that he has really comes through in the film. Yeah. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd like to move into some of the, like bigger themes that this film talks about and how they're integrated into, lessons from chess or analogies to chess. And I'd like to start just by quoting one line from the film, which, I mean, it's hard to choose a favorite line from this film.
I know, there's right? So there's many. A lot of good lines, yeah.
But this one may be, it's definitely amongst the top three probably for me. And speaking of crying earlier, I'm no shame in hitting.
I feel like crying now. Yeah, while you're talking, yeah.
The quote is from the character of Mario. What you've got is 64 squares, 32 pieces. It doesn't matter how rich or poor you are, what Ivy League school you may go to or may not go to, what prison you hopefully never set foot in, because chess is the great equalizer. And that last part, chess is the great equalizer.
I feel like I'm choking, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. I know, yeah. Right? It's such a powerful statement. To me, that really resonated as one of the key themes of the film, that chess is a great equalizer. Because when I heard that, it struck me that for these kids, chess is an oasis, a refuge from all the social, racial, economic injustice that they face in their lives, and that they get a venue in chess to escape all that and finally compete
get
on
out.
Equal footing. Yeah.
Right. And get out. Right.
None of that exists on the chessboard. And it's a beautiful refuge and place for them. And I was just wondering if you could just maybe what your thoughts are on that, if you want to comment on that. To me, that's one of the key themes of the film.
So, you know, the fact that you're not allowed to talk while you know, in a tournament was great for them because they didn't speak English. So it was actually a benefit. And they were so good that they could look at the board and see their future on the board, and hopefully take those lessons into their lives. You know, like a good chess player or any chess player wishes to know is, you know, you want to look 10 moves down, 5 moves down, mate in 5, mate in 4, you know, all that. Right. But not a lot of people, maybe some people can get there, but they don't understand that it's not just on the board. It's in life. And so if you learn those lessons, and that's what Mario Martinez was trying to say, is don't just play chess, but learn from it. Like, I have another one that is my favorite, one of my favorite metaphors, about bullying. You know, to me, like the pawn conversion, it may not seem like a big deal, but a piece that has no numerical value can then become the most powerful piece on the board. What is that? You know, that is like, I mean, that's such an incredible thing. I mean, to me, you know, those kids that considered themselves no numerical value in life ended up kings. And I feel like that is a huge lesson that they took for the rest of their lives. There's a bunch more lessons that I believe that they themselves would say were their premier lessons, but I have a bunch of them on my own.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I love about this film, and there are many, is that chess isn't just chess in this film. Chess is a place to learn the lessons of life. Chess is a constant metaphor for them on how to succeed in life. It's, yes, they're trying to get better at the game when they play their opponents and all that, but it's much bigger than just winning against any individual opponent in a tournament. This is about how to tap into the full potential for their life. And I just think that's beautiful. And I love that that's portrayed.
You know, you can't always win in life or on the board, obviously. So it's your responsibility to either draw or lose and do it elegantly and do it accurately and do it beautifully and walk away and play another game and not let it like ruin your life. You have to learn that. It's a skill. It's exercise. Your brain has to develop that muscle to learn that, you know, okay, I'm going to lose and I'm going to love this loss because I just learned more than I did by winning. And I know most people don't want to admit it at the time that they lose. Nobody really likes to lose, but learn how to lose, learn how to accept a draw or, you know, ask for a draw is hard. These kids wanted to win, but sometimes it's better to win half of something or lose to an incredible lesson that they can then take with them.
Yeah, absolutely. There are other chess films out there. And there's others that are very good, but they tend to hit the same notes to me on the messages from chess that the life lessons that chess can teach, and critical thinking, in my opinion, covered new ground in that. They covered areas of they covered life lessons that chess teaches that have not been covered in other films. For example, the one you just mentioned about taking a draw. I mean, that's very subtle. You know, that's the idea of not just going for the full point, except the half point. I think I forget the exact quote that Mario says in the film, but you know that it guarantees not losing. Says,
right, it guarantees to not lose. Right,
right.
You know, yeah. I mean, and also the lessons that we try to impart in this film that weren't strictly for chess were needed by these people. They needed these lessons, or they would have ended up dead, or dealing drugs, or never getting out. So you know, they had no choice. So the lessons they really through their mentor, through Mario Martinez for 10 years, who was absolutely, you know, not only their mentor, but he created a safe space that was constant. It never changed. Like, it was just all the time that these guys could come before school, after school, during school, tournaments. It was that personal. He wasn't going to let one single kid end up where he wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, and I think to me, that's kind of the heartbeat of the film, is his compassion and his caring for these kids. And that, you know, obviously chess was just a medium, basically, to care for them, you know, and teach them. And I love that aspect of the film.
You know, one of the other lessons I felt was important is not be reactive, because in that part of town, you see someone come to you, you know, whether it's on the street or on a board, and you react, you have that fight or flight. It was a dangerous place to exist. And so to learn how to not be reactive is very important, to learn to take a breath and just see what's happening. Am I getting attacked on the board or in life, or is it just my imagination? Should I take a breath? Also important is, you don't have to move if you see a good move. You just take a breath. Maybe there's a better move. You know, so all these lessons, you know, you don't have to maybe take that job. Maybe there's, you're that good that maybe you could just wait a bit, just take a breath, and maybe another job will come along. Or when it came to school, you know, a better grade or a better book or whatever. So these lessons were not chess lessons to them. It was a guide and a blueprint for how to live their lives, and it changed their trajectory. They would not have gotten out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. One more very brief quote that I want to mention, and you already said it and I love it, is your mind can be your weapon. These characters, they don't have the most supportive families, if they even have a family.
Correct.
They don't have much money to speak of. They endure prejudice. But they have chess, and that teaches them to use their minds. And what's clear to me about that is that aspect of using your mind is their ticket to escape the hardship in their lives. If they can tap in to the full potential of their mind and their own power in that, then they have an escape. And you mentioned, Carla, that you were an immigrant, right? Is that right?
Yes,
you were an immigrant.
And I am.
So I'm curious how that resonates with you, that idea that your mind is your weapon. You come to a new country, and you know, you don't have all the resources you'd like to have, but you do always have your mind. How does that resonate for you in your own life?
So I was bullied terribly. I didn't speak English, you know, and I was in a school where nobody spoke Spanish, you know. So, and it was in it wasn't like now where everyone is, you know, everyone is everywhere. So, I kind of used, the bullies to make like a quilt in my mind, which took me became a magic carpet and took me away, from the bullies. But what, again, my favorite chess reference, which affected me, was again the pawn conversion. I felt like they tried to make me feel like I did not have a numerical value, but yet I became the queen. So, it would have been great if I would have become the queen and maybe trained them, or not trained them, just translated in a way that they became not my bullies. But that's not up to me. I couldn't do everything. And if they didn't want to, that's fine. But I would have liked a 60-year-old me to come to a 9-year-old me and say, hey, you know, you're going to be a queen. You're not a pawn forever. So I feel that that's what helped me get through.
That's incredible.
Through my journey. Yeah.
Do you wish at all that you had chess back then, like the kids did, to help kind of give you these lessons too?
I don't regret things because I can't change them. So mm-hmm. I always say things happen for a reason, not for the best always, you know, I think the reason. Yeah. So I think if I would have, I think I would have been way too analytical during the 20 years. We can't do this. We can't use this guy. We can't, you know, we have to make a different color board. I mean, that's just the way I am. I'm glad that I was neutral and that I kind of went with my gut instinct as opposed to knowledge. I stay in my lane, like I said before, and I kind of let the experts do the chess, and I just made sure that the visuals matched everything and that they were perfect and beautiful and let everybody do their job the best that they know how. So no, I do not wish. I'm glad I didn't. I'm so glad because I don't know if I would have been able to be as open to ideas.
Well, maybe it came into your life at the best time then.
At the best time. Exactly. Yeah. For a reason. Yeah.
So I'd like to close this discussion by talking about the future. You mentioned that you're currently working on a series about the other years of this Miami High School chess team.
Yeah.
What can you tell us right now about the project?
Nothing. No, I'm kidding. It was always part of the 20-year plan. Always. Mm. I didn't know that we were going to get accepted into the best film festival in the world. For us, at least, South by Southwest, you know, there was a bidding war. There was, we were at the biggest theater Saturday night. Everything was great. And then 1 week before, a virus came and ate the world, and our movie ended up on a much different trajectory than it would have ordinarily. I think it would have won many, many Oscars and other Independent Spirit Awards and just other awards. Not that we need those awards to validate the film. But I always knew that if the film landed properly and well, and it did because it had a 94% Rotten Tomatoes rating, that I would automatically put into motion the rest of the stories. So that I just didn't realize. So basically every kid who ever went through the program, who by the way is listed in the credits because just in case, you know, every child that went through, girl and boy that went through that program is listed in the credits because I felt bad that they couldn't be on the film. So that's what I want to show, is that it wasn't just 1 year. It's practice, and it's just being there for them all the time, and, you know, very consistently, and giving them a safe place. And that got all of them, all of the 10 years, every kid is out. And some of them are master's degrees, PhDs, this, that. They're all happy. They have families. I'm not saying chess is a panacea. They still have tough lives tough lives, but it was their magic carpet.
That's amazing. Well, I cannot wait for that to come out and for the world to see it. You know, obviously this film is great for everybody, in my opinion, regardless of whether they have an interest in chess or not.
Thank you.
But that said, because I am pretty dialed into the chess community, it's my personal mission to make sure that every chess player I know has seen this film.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Really appreciate it. And I promise you the first podcast I do when we get greenlit, I'll come back and do this when we start filming the TV series.
Absolutely. I would love that. That invitation is there for you whenever that becomes the situation. And
thank you.
It's so good talking to you today.
Likewise. Carla. Thank you so much. And, you know, I always appreciate when somebody wants to hear not what I say, but pretty much just about what these kids went through and what they accomplished. Who, how many people can say that a movie was made about them?
Yeah. Remarkably few. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, what they accomplished is amazing.
And thank you. Amazing, thank you for putting this out there to give them their respect that they deserve.
Absolutely. I mean, all respect to them, everyone involved in this project. Just honored to have you on the show.
Likewise.
Carla, and I will stay in touch, and I will be promoting the heck out of this film for years to come.
Thank you so much, Daniel. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carla.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of my business, Adult Chess Academy. And that has a website with the same name if you want to look for it. You can also find me being way too active on Twitter by searching my username, Lona_chess. See you next week.